Welcome to the Coworkers Podcast with Jesse and Shaney,
where every believer is a coworker in God's mission. Hola, how's everybody doing?
Yeah, happy 4th to our American friends out there.
Happy 4th of July. We are in America.
That's right, celebrating it. Small town, America style.
My hometown has an annual 4th of July parade and festival that our family had a large percentage of the entries into the parade in.
All of which were tractors.
Yes.
I drove an antique tractor.
Lots of antique tractors.
That belonged to your great-grandfather.
Yes. And my all three of our kids were on tractors,
yesterday.
Parade.
Yep.
So
that's how we do it,
that
folks.
Is a glimpse into our life in America. Mm-hmm. We are back waiting on visas for us to be able to live long-term in Spain.
That's
and
right.
This topic has been coming up lately.
Mm-hmm.
And just gave us the desire to talk a little bit about why should we spend all the money to send American missionaries
and effort
and all the effort when there are in many places of the world so many local believers that we could support financially from afar, right?
Now, we're assuming that most of our listeners are already bought into sending American missionaries. You're either already on the field or you're sending. That's actually the reason why you're listening to our podcast.
Right.
But I think it's good to just address from time to time some of those basics, some of the fundamentals of why do we do that? Because this is an active conversation in the broader missions world, I would say. Mm-hmm. It's a pressing issue even, I think, given the changing complexity of Christianity around the world, right? Because it is a different time now than it was maybe at the peak of missionary sending, or when there was a lot of conversation about it, mid-20th century, late 20th century, the complexion of the world is changing. The complexion of the church is changing. Church is booming in some parts of the world that used to be unreached.
Mm-hmm.
Chinese church has been exploding and even sending missionaries now for years. The Korean church, I think I heard, this is one of those stats you can get on the internet, is now sending per capita more missionaries than America. African church, sub-Saharan African church is booming. Many parts of South America now sending missionaries to other parts of the world. Even some of those have come out and joined some of our teams on the field, right? So the sending of missionaries, that has certainly expanded beyond just America, beyond just the West.
Yes. Praise God.
Yeah, exactly. Which is an incredible thing to celebrate. But maybe it makes that question even more important to answer of why are we still sending American missionaries? Yes, they are. They're expensive. Let's be honest, we're kind of entitled. We can be somewhat still ethnocentric, and Americans are notoriously monolinguistic, right? So that means we have to learn language when we go out. So to many in the world, and I think maybe this question will even grow in volume, why are we still sending American missionaries when all these other sending centers are now sending out good, faithful missionaries? Why go through all the effort and the trouble?
Mm-hmm.
I think that very question was popularized by an Indian missionary named K.P. Yohanan. You might have heard of him before. He's the founder of Gospel for Asia, or GFA. He wrote a book that was first published in 1986 and since has gone through many republishings, but it's called Revolution in World Missions. And it basically argues that the great wealth of the American church needs to be directed towards funding indigenous workers, indigenous missionaries. I think in a nutshell, you could summarize his argument as don't send more missionaries from America, send American money. Now, that's again, understandable opinion. And I think it actually, in general, it's a good book. It's a good read. I would recommend it to you. It tells a great story of his calling into ministry, basically coming from South India to Bible College in America, and then the founding of GFA. And it's done great things over the years. We actually worked with GFA indigenous workers when we were on the field. A lot of good, faithful people doing great work in a lot of forgotten places all around South Asia. And so it's an important question. And I think there's a lot of truths within that broader statement or that broader argument, or at least a lot of ways that we need to examine ourselves as the American church and ask maybe some hard questions about how we send. Because again, compared to most of the locals in unreached places, those indigenous workers, even that we knew, we were comparatively a lot more expensive to send and support. In pure dollars, several more, if not like tens more, of local missionaries could be supported in India and South Asia for the same price of sustaining an American family. I would also say Americans are, compared to many of the frontline local workers we've known over the years, just less hardy. Right? Those folks are oftentimes living in difficult situations. They also don't have to learn language. They don't have to get visas. And they also are not in danger of having those visas canceled.
Right.
So mobilizing and supporting solid local workers for all of those reasons, that has to be a major part of any global mission strategy in any perspective, whether you're on the field, whether you're looking at it from ascending church, even organizations. We have increasingly focused on that as an organization over the past several years of how do we come alongside and help support local sending efforts from some of these places, like a Brazil that now has this an expansive Baptist convention and ascending agency. And how do we come alongside them and help them to support in good ways, but also to support workers that come and join our teams on the field, right?
Yes.
So that has to be a part. That's right. Actually, I would argue, if you're not thinking about that, you are way behind and you're missing out on something exciting that God is doing. And I think that something that's thoroughly biblical as well that we'll talk about in just a bit.
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm realizing that I think in terms of this argument that stop sending Americans, just send money because of all these reasons, I think we agree with many of the reasons, just not the conclusion.
Yeah.
We agree. Right. We agree that local workers are much more fruitful. They can live there for life. They don't have to learn the language. Mm-hmm. They are insiders. Yes, we agree. Focus on locals for church planting work, for evangelism, for sending out missionaries. However, we don't agree with the conclusion that we shouldn't send American missionaries due to all those reasons.
Right. And maybe just to throw this out there, to be fair, I doubt that Yohanan would have said, he has passed on since then, but I doubt that K.P. Yohanan himself would have said, hey, don't send any more American missionaries, period.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would have just said, look at all these resources. Let's weight it more towards supporting local workers.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, though, what's the positive case for sending American missionaries?
Yep.
Obviously, we still believe in it. We're 20 years in, hoping for many years more, and working alongside of awesome coworkers as well that we would celebrate and say, yes, this is totally worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So why would we say that?
Yeah.
So we have a few reasons here that we want to walk through with you all, some biblical reasoning that we'd like to talk through.
Yes, we have several reasons to talk through, but we want to make it very clear that our most highlighted and in bold reason is that sending missionaries is biblical.
Yeah.
And it's the responsibility of all believers in every church in all of history.
That's right.
There isn't anything in the Bible that insinuates, well, here's when you maybe shouldn't send missionaries from your church. The Great Commission that is in various forms in all of the Gospels tells us, go into the world.
Yeah.
Take the gospel to the nations. Mm-hmm. Proclaim the gospel to the whole creation.
Yeah. Those aren't optional things. Those aren't things to later be adjudicated, adjusted based on the present world context, right? Those are commands to all believers, all churches for us to receive.
Mm-hmm.
So go and make disciples of all nations, right? The Mark Great Commission version. Go into the whole creation, right? And preach the gospel, all the world. Acts 1:8, also, you will receive power and the Holy Spirit has come upon you. You will be my witnesses to the ends of the earth. Those are words to all of us as believers, to the whole church. And so for us to excuse ourselves because it seems financially imprudent or not the best use of our resources, that's actually just disobedience.
And it's part of God's design for every believer in every church that they become senders and goers.
Yeah.
So that's why even in unreached places, as soon as we get believers in churches, that is always our goal.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as possible, we want to see them sending and going.
Yep.
Even when the money's tight, even when it doesn't make sense for them.
That's right.
That's always the goal because God has this design, right? Mm-hmm. For this is how a believer's life should look. This is how a church's life should look. And missions is such a huge part of it. It is good for the American church to send missionaries. It's also good for unreached places to receive American missionaries and to be working towards their own sending and going.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, honestly, for the American church, if we simply forfeit this calling to send and to go, then we're deepening what I would say is the already deadly spiral of affluence, of comfort, of inactivity in the American church. And God is still, the other side of this, the positive side is God is still calling Americans to go.
Mm-hmm.
Are we to tell them, no, you shouldn't go?
Mm-hmm.
You're too expensive? I think he's still calling American churches to send.
Mm-hmm.
And so to withdraw from sending our own missionaries, I think would just accelerate what seems like a slow sickening and decline of the American church, if we were to pull back from that, I just think it'd be really bad for the American church, right? I don't think it's a coincidence that the modern missions movement that was kicked off by William Carey and the last years of the 18th century coincides with the largest expansion of biblical Christianity in all of history. We've seen the gospel explode, particularly in the last 100 years, as the American church has been sending. Those aren't unrelated, right? That's not a coincidence that those things have happened together. Not that it's all because of what the American church has done, but just to see that spirit of sending, that obedience to the Great Commission, and seeing that even increase across the globe, that's resulted in this global harvest. Those things are intertwined.
Mm-hmm. So you can stop listening now. That's our main point. Just kidding. But that is our main point. And now we're going to talk through, though, some of these reasons that come into this argument of, well, local believers are so much more fruitful. And what about the finances? What about how much money it takes to support and send American missionaries? We're just going to talk through those a bit.
Some of the more practical issues.
Yes. Yes. So first, let's talk through how then should we send Americans? Mm-hmm. What should their purpose be?
That's right. Yeah, I think it's important as we think about sending American missionaries, we ask the question, what are we sending them to do? Because that is a key point. If we are, in the minds of our churches, in the minds of people maybe who are asking this question, if we're simply sending them to do what like local Christians could do, then I would argue—
And do better than us.
Yeah, and do better than us, right. Then I would argue that, yeah, maybe we should rethink how we're sending them, what we're sending them to do. But I think the way that we think wisely about that, and we've made this case several times in different episodes on the podcast, but if we're just sending them to be those like frontline workers or to just pastor churches on a long-term basis, right? Just go be a local pastor for the rest of your career in one church. Then I agree that the smart thing to do would be to put our money behind local workers, indigenous partners and networks who could do it cheaper with more stability and probably better. But if we're sending them to be foundation layers like Paul, to be pioneer workers breaking new ground and new people or among new peoples and places that are ultimately working to be catalytic multipliers, that are going to be investing themselves in local workers that are going to continue to multiply, like the Barnabas role we talked about in a previous episode, where you're coming alongside at the beginning, maybe even you are doing some of that frontline foundation laying work at the beginning. But very quickly, you're looking to, how do I multiply this work? How do I pour myself into indigenous workers and pass off that work by mobilizing, equipping, encouraging them to go?
Yeah.
That role is a force multiplier. That role is different than just basically doing what any other local worker would do. You're actually multiplying the work from the very beginning through that foundation laying Barnabas role.
Yeah. So as we send Americans, we are sending people who are going to then focus on locals.
That's right.
To put it simply.
Yeah.
As much as is possible, acknowledging different mission fields have different numbers and percentages of local believers. So being sensitive to that, but as much as possible, that Americans' desire is to empower local believers to catalyze more work among local believers.
Right? Yeah.
So in an economic way, it gives us more bang for our buck, right? We're not just paying for one worker to live in another country. We're paying for an American worker to, man, spur on, stir up, train so many local believers to do that work.
Yeah, and we've seen it. I mean, this has been our experience. We've seen and can testify to the crucial catalytic role that's played by an outsider in indigenous movements. The simple fact is that a lot of what we have seen over the course of our time on the field would not have happened had there not been a crucial catalytic outsider to provide that voice, to provide that training, to provide that encouragement. Even we've talked a lot about the role that the outsider has played in the lives of local leaders and local believers, is to be that encouragement, to be that voice, to be that spark. Again, that doesn't mean they're not involved in the work. A lot of times that means in the first stages, you're modeling for people.
Yeah.
You're walking out alongside them.
You might be the frontline worker for a season until you have more locals ready to join you.
Yeah, that's right. And at a couple of our episodes,
many episodes back.
Yeah. We interviewed Glenn and Rhonda, who I feel like really just encapsulate this, that they exemplify this in a great way, that their story is one of the best examples that we could point to, of some strategic outsiders who sparked a major indigenous work. And that, I mean, the literal truth is that work would not have happened had Glenn and Rhonda not come into that context, right? Had they not been there, it just wouldn't have happened.
Right. That God gave them the mission's knowledge and through their prayers, through their living there, loving the people, being able to walk alongside local believers, it spurred on so many people hearing the gospel and churches planted.
That's right.
And it doesn't make them the heroes, and they aren't the main doers. That's kind of the interesting thing about it. But I think it again shows God's beautiful, complex design for how his church grows globally.
Yeah.
That in some ways he sends us these weak outsiders who just, we have so much against us when we move to a foreign place. And yet he does use us in a special way to bless and spur on work among those people groups. And as much as we can, we're fading out of that as they catch that vision and get the tools and training that they need.
And I think it's important, too, to remember, even in their case, there was a ton of frontline work that was done through modeling at the beginning of that. That Glenn, especially, just because Rhonda had little kids at the beginning stages, but I mean, he was out in the field doing the work alongside of his local partners for hundreds and thousands of hours. I mean, he devoted himself to that. So not to diminish that in any way, just to emphasize that his involvement in the frontline work went through stages, right? There was heavy investment on the front end. And then as local believers were being raised up, as their faithfulness was being proven, then he was beginning to step out of that frontline work and operated more in that Barnabas role of, hey, I'm going to support and encourage. I'm going to challenge. I'm going to walk through, provide accountability, those kinds of things, to the point where they now are not living there anymore, right? That they've exited that work.
They've returned to the States. They have stayed connected to their brothers and sisters there. They're supporting from afar, but in many ways, that work is not dependent upon them anymore. And so that brings us to our next point of how we send missionaries. We send them still with a focus on local believers and to catalyze more work through locals, but also we send them with the end in mind.
Yeah, that's
that they are not the long-term goal or plan for that place. We always send planning to leave.
That's right.
We never get to fully settle in a place because our desire is to see work started among believers and continue to a point where we can leave.
We've talked so many times about the missionary task: entry, evangelism, discipleship, church formation, leadership development, and exit. Exit to partnership. That's where we're headed because that's the biblical pattern. We see it happen over and over again. Paul and his co-workers following that pattern, entering a new place, breaking ground with the gospel, making disciples, starting churches, raising up leaders, and then moving on. And so that exit has to be something that we're thinking about from the very beginning as we think about working as catalytic outsiders, as we're thinking about working as foundation layers, always with that end in mind. When we get to the point where we can say, there's no longer any room left for us to work in these regions, like Paul said in Romans 15. So we should always be looking for, and I would argue even from the beginning stages of the work, what are those initial places where we can be handing off responsibility? We can be looking for how do we platform our local believers, give them more responsibility? Because long-term dependence on foreigners is a recipe, I think, for anemia in local churches. It has a stifling effect on the local growth of the work. If it's always in the hands of locals, or sorry, if it's always in the hand of outsiders, then it's going to stifle the growth. It's going to stifle, honestly, the maturity, the ongoing health of the local work, if that continues to be, if that's a perpetual cycle. I think the scriptures, that's why that pattern's in the scriptures, and missions history bears that out as well.
Yeah. So all believers in churches sending missionaries is biblical. We do want to send with a focus on local believers, catalyzing, training, with our exit in mind.
Right.
Now, let's talk, though, about the financial side. About this thought and really facing the reality that it costs a ton of money to send and sustain an American family on the field. I'm so thankful for sacrificial givers who allow our family to be there. And I recognize we have a lot of expenses.
Yeah.
How do we reconcile that tension?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we should begin by affirming that the kingdom economy doesn't work simply in terms of dollars and cents, right? Yes, we should be wise stewards of our funds. I think, especially now as we look even from a new perspective, right? Going to a new place, we have a bit of a broader scope in terms of how we're looking at the people that we're supporting. And our people are living in very expensive places compared to what we have, what's been our experience up till now. And so we have to be wise stewards of our funds. That has to be a part of how we think about spending our money as an organization, right? And like we said already, any good strategy should also include how do we support and send local partners, right? How are we also thinking about that and including that in our broader strategy? But we also just have to see that kingdom impact can't always be measured in terms of like bang for your buck. It's not as simple as comparing the cost of an American family versus a local family. Like the example we already talked about in the case of Glenn and Rhonda, to name just one of many, the cost of sustaining that one American family on the field literally resulted in hundreds of indigenous workers who wouldn't otherwise have been engaged in gospel work, many of whom wouldn't otherwise have been saved, even a part of the kingdom. And so God provides and multiplies resources for his purposes, right? So alongside of God's just general intention to be sending missionaries, that that's what God wants to do. So alongside of that, he provides the resources to do that as well. We're not lacking in resources because God's not lacking in his desire to send. And so that generosity, it overflows in abundance in the kingdom, right? As all of God's people are giving, there's abundance to be able to do what he wants us to do. 2 Corinthians 9 bears this out. As Paul is writing to the Corinthian church in chapters 8 and 9, he's commending the Macedonian churches in chapters 8 for giving even out of their poverty. But he just reminds us in chapter 9, verses 10 and 11, he says, "He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way to be generous in every way, which through us will produce thanksgiving to God." So God is the one who supplies the seed to the sower. He supplies our bread for food. He will multiply our seed for sowing. It says he'll increase the harvest of our righteousness. He will multiply our generosity. That's just the way that it works. That's how the kingdom economy works. So it's not a zero sum. It's not like taking from this bucket will mean that this bucket has more in it or vice versa. It's generosity that multiplies. When we give as God's people, he multiplies so that the needs are met in order for us to do what he wants us to do.
Our God is such a generous, giving God. It is humbling. I just pray God helps us as Americans to be good stewards because we have so much resources. And when I think about the need to send more missionaries or a lack of funds for missions, I don't think the issue is a lack of resources. I think it's just people needing to get a heart for God's work around the world. And that motivates us to give sacrificially. We have a lot of resources in America. I say that for myself. Lord, please help us to steward all that you've given us well for your kingdom.
And it needs to be given wisely, right? It needs to be given to good, faithful workers and to faithful work that's on the field. And so that leads us to our next point. I think that there is an accountability and a stewardship that we carry with that generosity to be giving in a way that is that has integrity, that's being given to faithful work, that's going to sustain, that is leading to, I would say, greater local stewardship, right? It's giving in a way that facilitates ownership of the work locally among our indigenous workers. Because there are lots of stories out there about well-intentioned giving out of that generosity in the States that hasn't led to good things on the field. In fact, there's been a lot of train wrecks out there.
I mean, hate to even bring it up because I wouldn't want to insinuate that it's the norm, but there are many times when locals in unreached places can really be using foreigners and just getting lots of money and using it poorly. And it's difficult for us as foreigners. If we don't have people on the ground, just practically speaking, it's very difficult to be able to give to locals in another country in a way that's healthy and helpful without having someone on the ground who is connected to those local believers in and knows them, connected to their work, can provide like support, insight, so that it's not just funds coming without like support and partnership.
And I would say, to be clear, that applies to giving to Americans who've been sent as well. That if we just give to Americans and there's no other eyes on, like if we send out maybe one particular family or a couple of families and there's no other eyes on what they're doing, I'd just say the importance of accountability in community.
Yes.
When money is given from America into another context, the importance of that accountability in community.
Yeah.
Whether that's multiple Americans that are working together, the structure that we have, for instance, where there's teams, there are also supervisors, there's leadership that's speaking into that, there's openness, and then there's accountability. That applies whether we're sending Americans, foreign workers, or working with local indigenous workers as well.
Right. Having transparency about funds, having a team ethos of opening up our books, sharing how are we receiving funds, how are we using funds, is really important.
Yeah, that's right. And that accountability is local in that context, right? So I think one of the healthiest sort of approach that we've been able to see, or the ecosystem that grows up from that, is when those books are open both with local workers, both with foreigners from the outside, we're able to just have that financial accountability and then communicate that accountability back to the givers in the States.
Right. So we do have ways for our American church partners to give directly to our local partners, right?
Yep.
But they are supporting new church plants or new church planters in different ways. Mm-hmm. But normally we have American missionaries that are connected to those churches who are on the ground, who are a part of that. We call it the three-legged stool, right?
Yep.
We have the American church partner, we have the American missionary, we have the local partners on the ground.
Yeah.
And those three together are a team.
That's right.
They're in communication, they're praying for each other, and they have that clarity of what the funds are going towards and the ministry on the ground, that having an on-the-ground missionary is really a key part of.
Yeah, that's right. And so having that accountability locally, being able to open the books, walk in the light together when it comes to those funds. Because the other part of it is, as well, is we're not just trying to perpetuate a system in which that three-legged stool where all the money is always coming from America, right? Mm-hmm. That we're ultimately working towards, just like we're working towards exit, we're also working towards seeing local believers and local churches becoming more and more generous themselves, where they're becoming the ones who can hopefully in future years be sending also. And so they're also looking to multiply that to where we're trying to multiply that three-legged stool to where actually the ones who are receiving now become the givers and the senders. Because just like the Great Commission belongs to the whole global church, sending and supporting for the Great Commission, that also belongs to the whole global church, right? And I think this is a sometimes overlooked implication of the argument that Yohanan makes, is don't send missionaries, just send money from America, is the further question, well, when does that receiving church, for instance, the church in India or the church in some of the unreached parts of the world, when does the receiving church become the giving church? How does a movement that's grown up subsidized by the West become a full partner in Great Commission work by sending and supporting its own churches and its own workers? Because again, Great Commission responsibility includes that financial piece, that financial ownership and stewardship of the task. That's what we have termed over and over again, that local ownership or local stewardship. That's what we're working towards, is not just that they're doing the work, but they're also funding the work. They're supporting the work. They're sending people into the work, maybe even into other parts of the world. And so the price tag for the Great Commission also belongs to the whole church. So that's what we're working towards with that exit conversation, is not just the work itself, but ultimately that financial...
The exit of funds.
That's right,
also.
The exit of funds as well. Because generosity, sacrificial giving, those are Christian characteristics, right? Not just for Christians who have lots of money. Yeah, I think that there are maybe an added responsibility for Christians who are rich. 1 Timothy 6 speaks to that, that Christians who are rich should be generous. I think that we should provide for people who have less than us, right? That's a part of the Christian economy as well, is that those who have more provided for those who have less. But it's also Christian for an abundance of joy and extreme poverty to overflow into a wealth of generosity. like it was in the case of the Macedonian churches, like we mentioned in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, that they were extremely poor, but they still begged for the opportunity to be able to give. So that's also Christian. So we need to be encouraging even churches in hard places, churches that have limited means financially to give. And by God's grace, we've seen that. We've seen these churches that are in really poor villages, really poor circumstances, overflow in giving and generosity. And maybe doesn't look like the scale that we would see from churches in America, but they are giving according to their means. And God sees that and he blesses that. And I think that there's just going to be more and more of that as the church continues to grow in places that used to be unreached.
Good. So to summarize, Christians all over the world, God's desire is for all believers and all local churches to be actively involved in the Great Commission, to be sending, to be going, to be giving generously and sacrificially. And for ourselves, as a family that's been on the field for 20 years, I am so thankful for sacrificial givers that have played that part in the Great Commission, allowing us to be there, and want to just remind all of you who do give to missions, God sees it, he honors it, and you are providing an important role in this work that is necessary. We can't do this work without money. And so we thank you all and encourage you to continue giving generously and trust God to bless and honor that giving.
That's right. And for those of you who are sending and who are giving and who are a part of this economy from the American side, we want to encourage you to train your potential goers well. The things that we've been talking about on this podcast, when we're asking the question of what are they being sent to do, I would just encourage you to take seriously that stewardship, to send the people who are worthy of your support, who have a good grasp of what they're being called to do, who do see themselves as those catalytic outsiders who are pointing towards their exit, who are longing to see local churches, indigenous churches raised up and multiplied that are going to carry the work on far beyond themselves.
And for missionaries on the field, like us, I know you are super thankful for our givers and you're aware of all the funds that are needed to keep us there. And we don't feel guilt over that. Jesus is the Lord of the harvest, and he provides all of the resources. This was all his idea. And so may we serve with joy and also just doing the best we can by faith, with integrity, with openness to steward those funds well, to make the most of our time as the word tells us to do, and for God to give us wisdom in how to mobilize, encourage, send out local believers to do that work in all of our places.
And that we also would be living lives of generosity. As we have been the recipients of so much grace and so much support from people, that we also, just like we would expect of our local believers, we also would be generous with our time, with what's been given to us, but that we would be supporting, that we would also be giving. That's what he's called us to do. So just like we've said that the Great Commission belongs to the whole church, generosity is a Christian characteristic across the board that belongs to us as well as those who have been sent. Let's be generous people and honor him in that way.
Let's keep sending. Let's keep giving. Let's keep going.
All of it. All the stuff.
All right.
Thanks, friends.